Welcome to West Hills Unitarian Universalist Sunday Services. I am the Reverend Tracy Springberry, and it is my great pleasure to serve this warm and welcoming congregation. You are welcome here, no matter who you love, no matter where you are, no matter how you feel. You are welcome here. You are welcome whether you feel you are a person with a great deal of willpower and ability to resist temptation in your life. You are welcome if you are not a person who can do this at all. You are welcome if you are feeling lots of resilience and ability to just get through this pandemic and that it's really going fine for you. And you are welcome if you feel like you just want to crawl under the covers on the couch and not get up for several years. Everyone's welcome, no matter how they feel and who they are. You are all beloved children of the universe. And I would like to invite everyone to coffee hour after the service at 11:30. It is just a great time to see each other, share our joys and sorrows, and talk about the service or other things that come up. We welcome newcomers who can get the link from Pat Lichen, our administrator, or it came in your email this morning, the link to coffee hour. So I look forward to seeing all of you there. This is our chalice lighting. Our chalice lighting is from Peter Samojowski. May this flame we light remind us that every one of us can bring the light of love to the world. May this clear flame be a symbol that every heart can burn bright with joy, peace, and harmony. May the wisdom of the ages speak to us through this flame and stay in us. May every one of us be a blessing to the world. Let us say our affirmation together. Let us open our eyes to see what is beautiful. Let us open our minds to learn what is true. Let us open our hearts to love one another.
Thank you. A reading by Lao Tzu. By letting it go, it all gets done. The world is won by those who let it go. But when you try and try, the world is beyond the winning. A good traveler has no fixed plans and is not intent on arriving. All difficult things have their origin in that which is easy, and great things in that which is small. Ambition has one heel nailed in well, though she stretches her fingers to touch the heavens.
The story I'm telling you this morning is from Frog and Toad Together. And this is one of my favorites. It's titled Cookies. Toad baked some cookies. These cookies smell very good, said Toad. He ate one. And they taste even better, he said. Toad ran to Frog's house. Frog, Frog, cried Toad, taste these cookies that I have made. Frog ate one of the cookies. These are the best cookies I've ever eaten, said Frog. Frog and Toad ate many cookies, one after the other. You know, Toad, said Frog with his mouth full, I think we should stop eating. We will soon be sick. You are right, said Toad. Let us eat one last cookie and then we will stop. Frog and Toad ate one last cookie. There are many cookies left in the bowl. Frog, said Toad, let us eat one very last cookie, and then we will stop. Frog and Toad ate one very last cookie. We must stop eating, cried Toad, as he ate another. Yes, said Frog, reaching for a cookie. We need willpower. What is willpower? Asked Toad. Willpower is trying very hard to not do something that you really want to do, said Frog. You mean like trying not to eat all of these cookies? Asked Toad. Right, said Frog. Frog put the cookies in a box. There, he said, now we will not eat any more cookies. But we can open the box, said Toad. That is true, said Frog. Frog tied some string around the box. There, he said, now we will not eat any more cookies. But we can cut the string and open the box, said Toad. That is true, said Frog. Frog got a ladder. He put the box up high on a shelf. There, said Frog, now we will not eat any more cookies. But we can climb the ladder and take the box down from the shelf and cut the string and open the box, said Toad. That is true, said Frog. Frog climbed the ladder and took the box down from the shelf. He cut the string and opened the box. Frog took the box outside. He shouted in a loud voice, hey birds, here are cookies. Birds came from everywhere. They picked up all the cookies in their beaks and they flew away. Now we have no more cookies to eat, said Toad sadly, not even one. Yes, said Frog, but we have lots and lots of willpower. You may keep it all, Frog, said Toad. I'm going home to bake a cake. This morning, our words for prayer and meditation are from Vanessa Southern. So much undone. So much to do. So much to heal in us and in the world. So much to acquire. A meal. A healthy body, a fit one, a lover, a job, a better job. Proof we have and are enough. Just around the corner of now. And up against it, the reality of all that falls short and the limit of today. We honor the limits. If your body won't do what it used to, for right now, let it be enough. If your mind won't stop racing or can't think of the word, let it be enough. If you are utterly alone and in despair, just be all that. If today you cannot sing because your throat hurts or you don't have the heart for music, be silent. When the offering plate goes around, if you don't have money to give or the heart to give, let it pass. The world won't stop spinning on her axis if you don't rise to all occasions today. Love won't cease to flow in your direction. Your heart won't stop beating. All hope won't be lost. You are part of the plan for this world's salvation. Of that I have no doubt. The world needs its oceans of people striving to be good, to carry us to the shores of hope and wash fear from the beachheads and cleanse all wounds so they can heal. But oceans are big, and I am sure there are parts that don't feel up to the task of the whole some days. Rest if you must, then, like a swimmer lying on her back who floats, or the hawk carried on cushions of air. Rest in pews made to hold weary lives in space carved out for doing of nothing much but being. Perhaps then you will feel in your bones, in your weary heart, the aching healing sense, this is enough, even this, we are enough, you are enough, enough. Now let us take time for prayer, meditation, and reflection, as is your tradition.
New Year's resolutions from Bridget Jones's diary, abridged. I will not drink more than 14 alcohol units a week. Smoke. Waste money on pasta makers, ice cream machines, or other culinary devices which we'll never use. Books by unreadable literary authors to put impressively on shelves. Spend more than earn. Fall for any of the following: alcoholics, workaholics, commitment phobics, people with girlfriends or wives, misogynists, megalomaniacs, chauvinists, emotional fuckwits, or freeloaders, perverts. Have crushes on men, but instead form relationships based on mature assessment of character. Bitch about anyone behind their backs, but be positive about everyone. I will give all clothes which have not worn for 2 years or more to homeless. Improve career and find new job with potential. Save up money in form of savings. Pause start pension also. Be more confident. Be more assertive. Make better use of time. Not go out every night, but stay in and read books and listen to classical music. Give proportion of earnings to charity. Be kinder and help others more. Get up straight away when wake up on mornings. Go to gym 3 times a week, not merely to buy sandwich. Put photographs in photograph albums. Form functional relationships with responsible adult. Learn to program video.
Love will guide us. Peace has tried us. Hope inside us. Will guide us through the hard night. If you cannot sing like angels, churches. If you cannot speak before thousands, you can give from deep within you. You can change the world with your love. Love will guide us. Peace has tried us. Hope inside us will lead the way. On the road from greed to giving, love will guide us through the hard night.
Once upon a time, at the beginning of the world, God made Adam and Eve, and he placed them in the Garden of Eden. And there everything flourished. It was a bountiful and wonderful place. He allowed them to eat all the fruit in the garden, except for the fruit of the tree of knowledge of good and evil. Oh, but it was so tempting. The fruit which hung forbidden on the tree looked like the most delicious fruit in the garden. Finally, unable to resist, Eve took a bite. It was delicious, and she convinced Adam to take a bite as well. And according to this very old story, from the beginnings of Western civilization, that was the downfall of humankind into a sinful state of being. The story is clear. Eve was tempted. She did not have enough willpower or self-control to overcome her temptation. This was her great failing and her great sin. She could not overcome her desire to eat the fruit to follow the greater good of the instructions of God. This is the story of sin in American culture. Most of what is considered sin is a person's inability to control the desires of the body and mind. The seven deadly sins of Western culture are lust, gluttony, greed, sloth, wrath, envy, and pride. They are constructed around the idea that we each have desires, such as eating, or wanting things, or rest, or self-respect, that will overcome us and take us over and make us dysfunctional and sinful. The only way out of this fate is to exert willpower, we are told in the story of Adam and Eve. Good people have self-control. Unitarian Universalists are not big on sin language. We do not agree with the idea that people are inherently sinful, that people are unable to control our desires even when tempted by forbidden fruit. We instead believe people have capacity for both good and evil. We believe that people can grow into goodness. And often we believe that it is the circumstances of people's lives that cause them to make good or poor choices. Most of us believe people make mistakes and can repair and return to their better selves. We cringe at most moral judgments. Most can't imagine what Catholics confess in their confession boxes. How can there be enough sin for a regular conversation about it? That until we show up at the dessert end of the potluck table. Suddenly, it's all sin language and signals of virtuousness. Oh, it's so sinful, someone will say as they put the frosting-covered brownie on their plate. Others will say, agreeing as they finish a bite, it's so sinful, so delicious. Just this once, someone else will say, taking some cheesecake, then adding, I rarely do this, signaling their innate willpower. Someone else will come by and look things over and say virtuously, it all looks so good, but I don't think so today. The American story around food is a story of the seven deadly sins brought to secular culture. The test of good character continues to be willpower. People often believe that how well people did on a test of willpower is demonstrated through the size of people's bodies. Thinness, they've discovered in studies, is often associated with good character. Thin people are considered more disciplined and able to get things done. They have curbed temptation, after all, the thinking goes. Being heavier is often associated in common thinking with a lack of self-control and laziness, because the assumption is people with heavier bodies don't have the willpower to exercise and resist temptation. Many consider being fat a character flaw, a moral issue, and associate it with being dysfunctional or irresponsible. Many of us take this into ourselves. The fact that we eat ice cream or candy or cookies shows our inability to resist temptation. Sometimes we simply enjoy such treats. But at other times, when we manage to eat a whole container of Häagen-Dazs before the television, there's a sense of failure, of badness, and shame that we could not resist those extra bites. The idea that self-control and willpower is virtuous is alive and well in American culture, and it is not only about food. It is prevalent in thoughts about addiction. Those who struggle with that are often blamed for not stopping, just stopping and pulling it together. Or in conversations about poverty and homelessness, one line of thinking is that if those people just had the discipline and willpower to go to school, work unpleasant jobs, or do well at work and get promotions, they wouldn't be in those situations. We have the cultural idea of deserving. Those who have exerted willpower, who have resisted temptation, or have been able to endure things they really don't want to do are deserving, and the rest are of suspect moral character. Perhaps secular Americans no longer use the word sin, but the idea stands. Those with self-control and willpower deserve good things. In fact, the story goes all good things flow from our capacity to control ourselves and our circumstances. If you don't have willpower, you aren't deserving of the good things in life, such as good health, happiness, well-being, housing, food. Do you remember the famous marshmallow experiment? Young children were put alone in a room with a marshmallow and told if they didn't eat the marshmallow within 15 minutes, they would get 2 marshmallows. Children who exhibited willpower and waited for the second marshmallow got better SAT scores, educational attainment, and good jobs. Yes, it was concluded across psychology. The old teaching of Western civilization theology was correct. Self-control and our capacity to stop ourselves from temptation made us successful in ways that matter. Since the 1970s, the experiment has been trotted out over and over to point out the importance of self-control for a good life. While legendary, the experiment turns out not to be replicable. All correlation between SAT scores was completely erased when socioeconomic factors were factored into it. It turns out that being raised poor is also correlated with poor outcomes for things like SAT scores and educational attainment, which could have a lot to do with school funding and issues like hunger and unreliable housing, and nothing to do whether we can wait 15 minutes to get 2 marshmallows. Our theme this month is intention. So often the idea of intention is confused with goals and resolutions. In January, it is a cultural tradition to set goals to improve ourselves. Self-improvement goals typically require willpower. Consider Bridget Jones' resolutions. Eat less, smoke less, drink less, be more cheerful, improve reading and organization, date better men. The story is a battle with Bridget's will to be the person she thinks she should be. It's funny because most of us relate to that failure. New Year's resolutions are nearly always abandoned by the end of January. The idea that thinness, or our capacity to curb our desire for a brownie right in front of us, is virtuous, of course, doesn't withstand scrutiny. Firstly, people's body size is not based on our ability to resist temptation, but complex factors such as genetics, biochemistry, gut health, and the environment. Plenty of thin people don't exercise, and plenty of heavy people do. Some people crave sugar and fats much more intensely than others, making cravings very difficult to overcome, becoming much like addiction. Others don't crave those things at all. Virtue isn't part of the equation. Of course, addiction and poverty are even more complicated in terms of cause, and again, have not a lot to do with willpower. Indeed, the whole thing is a setup to make us feel terrible. If we believe willpower is a virtue, then we feel badly, even shame, if we cannot do it. Meanwhile, Michael Dowd, an eco-theologian, has coined the term supernormal allurement to talk about this bind. Our bodies were created to want sugar and fat and rest and substances like alcohol and other drugs that make us feel good for a time. For most of human history, such desires were not necessarily bad things. I mean, you could only get so much sugar and fat, so it wasn't dangerous to the health for most people. Alcohol and drugs were also limited or in a mild form in traditional societies. They weren't created in this intense form that people use now. The days were limited by light, and rest was plentiful. Now, though, we have entire industries who try to create substances that our biology cannot resist to increase their profits. This includes the kinds of foods that are produced and the way drugs are produced today. Too much rest is considered laziness because profit is made by our interaction with an economy as producers and consumers. If we don't produce and consume, there isn't profit. To be able to sleep little and function much is another example of a way we ask our will to overcome our basic bodily needs. To sleep less and do more is considered a virtue in our society. Our society asks us to feel virtue if we resist temptation, and then floods the market with biologically unresistible temptations. We are set up to live at war with ourselves, spending intense amounts of personal energy simply resisting, resisting, resisting. For about 20 years, psychologists believed that willpower was something we each got and then used up over the course of a day. So you might get 5 spoons of willpower in the morning and use them up during your routine interactions with the consumerist economy during the day, and suddenly watching TV and eating ice cream all evening were not resistible because you'd used up your willpower spoons. This was called ego depletion. And bizarrely, there was really a book that isn't even that old, 10 or 15 years old, with the recommendation was to eat something sugary to add willpower spoons back. They suggested some lemonade. Recently, however, the research that led to those conclusions has also been found questionable and not replicable. Now researchers are beginning to wonder if willpower is even really a thing. There's evidence that those people who exercise might just like exercising more than those people who don't. And those who resist brownies often don't like brownies as much as other people. While those people get societal and perhaps personal points for willpower, they are not using self-control at all. just doing what is naturally part of who they are. People might also get willpower points when instead of willpower, they might just have good habits. Habits create patterns in our lives that we follow easily. They are not about exerting self-control to get us to do things we don't want to do, but about creating a flow to life that makes the things, those things just the things that we do do. So, for example, coming home from work each day, putting on exercise clothes, and walking leaves out the need for willpower. No thinking or consideration occurs. You just do it. But if you come home, put on lounging clothes, sit on the couch, and think you should exercise when you don't want to, that requires extreme willpower. The person who has cupcakes in their house has to use extreme willpower not to eat them. The person who never brings them home doesn't have to, as it was all exhibited in this morning's story of Frog and Toad. So what might this all mean in a month focused on intention? First, it is probably time to break ties with the Western civilization connection between the idea that good character has anything to do with one's capacity for self-control. The whole concept is based on the idea of badness. We have innate desires that must be overcome with a higher, better self. The only way to be good is to overcome our basic inclinations. But what about the idea that it isn't our ability to overcome our desires that makes us good, but simply being kind and loving? How about the idea that we don't need willpower to do the good thing, the kind thing, the thing that makes our lives and the lives of others better? What if that is just a thing that often feels great to do? Because we're mostly empathetic and kind people. Second, maybe we realize that focusing our lives in a direction that we want is not about overcoming our real desires, but about creating patterns of daily life and practices that support us in those intentions. If we want to feel better by exercising, maybe instead of forcing ourselves, we need to do exercise that we personally find very enjoyable. Or we make it fun in some way by doing it with a friend or listening to a good book or music while we walk or run. We need to make it just something we do rather than something we talk ourselves into. At 7 a.m. each day, we are out walking. We don't get in a conversation with ourselves about it. This is true for any intention we set in our lives. We make it part of our lives, something enjoyable, something with a specific place and time. Something we remind ourselves about, not beat ourselves up or shame ourselves. But because being distracted and being tempted in a too busy, constantly lit up, temptation-full, overproductive modern society is just a reality. We have so much to distract us. And always reminding ourselves gently of how we want to be and focus our attention is incredibly helpful. We want to be kind. How do we build this into our lives and make it enjoyable? We want to treat ourselves with care. How do we build this into our lives and make it enjoyable? We want to make other people's lives easier. How do we build this into our lives and make it enjoyable? We want to do what makes us fully alive and connected beings in this earth. How do we live that fully? Eve was tempted by the delicious hanging fruit and for millennia has been denounced as bad for her lack of willpower. All of her descendants were then denounced as bad for her and their lack of willpower. And today, still, many of us denounce ourselves or others as bad for our or their lack of willpower. And it is time to let it go. Because we are each enough. We are each lovable. We are all enough. Amen.
This is the time in our service when we pause to reflect on the gifts we have received from this abundant earth and the generous spirit of family and community. A time to remember what we have been given and what we have to be grateful for. During the musical interlude, please consider the gifts you have to offer our WOOF community. Whether it be financial support or the gifts of your time or talent, know that we are grateful for your offering. And let us remember that it's love that's built our community. Love that built the fires that warm us and planted the trees that shade us. We are ever grateful for all of the early stewards of this land, beginning with the original peoples, the indigenous tribes, many of whom live among us today, and to whom our virtual and physical doors are always open. WOOF exists because of the generous spirit and commitment of all those who came before us. Just as our future health depends on the dedication and commitment of those here today. Please join me in our affirmation of gratitude and giving. Let us be grateful when we are able to give, for many do not have that privilege. Let us be grateful for all those who share their gifts with us. For we are enriched by their giving. And let us be grateful even for our needs, so that we may learn from the generosity of others.
Our benediction is from Derek Walcott. The time will come when with elation you will greet yourself arriving at your own door, in your own mirror, and will smile at the other's welcome and say, sit here, eat. You will love the stranger who was yourself. Give wine, give bread, give back your heart to itself, to the stranger who has loved you all your life, whom you ignored for another, who knows you by heart. Take down the love letters from the bookshelf, the photographs, the desperate notes. Peel your own image from the mirror. Sit. Feast on your life. I extinguish this flame, but not the vision and compassion of our faith. May they stay with you until we meet again.